listener production.
This is our town. Welcome to episode 7 of the all-new Spotlight on Tassie for 2024.
My name's Tubes Taylor.
I'm Kaz McMullen.
And each episode we're shining a spotlight on all things Tassie.
Now, Tubes, in this episode I chat with a mobile patisserie, which turns out it's not as glamorous as it sounds.
Yes, Blue Sage Patisserie. I love their food. Met them at the Highlands Bush Fest late last year. And we also speak with the Cancer Council of Tasmania, Kaz.
How cool. All the money raised for the Cancer Council, it stays here in Tassie.
Yeah, absolutely love that. But let's kick things off now with a young man called Jackson Mellor. He's a Tassie athlete.
And he's just returned from the Australian Athletics Championship in Adelaide.
One thing I notice about you, Jackson Mellor, when you come in is that you are a big man, but you've always got a smile on your face. Why is that?
Geez, there's a lot to smile about. There is, really. Like, on the scheme of things, I've got sport and I'm able to, as a little athletics ambassador, you know, put smiles on hundreds of kids' faces if I do a visit to a club or something like that, you know, and catching up with other people just as coming back from nationals with like-minded goals, and it's just really rewarding. And, you know, a lot of people say, and not just about me, like I say it about other people who are bigger than me, that there's a lot of gentle giants in my sport, and we really are. We're part-time athletes, full-time idiots. So, and you got to be like that. Like, people forget sometimes, I feel like, that everyone starts sport for fun, and that's, like, obviously it gets more serious as you progress, but at the end of the day, it's sport, and, you know, you take it seriously, but not too much. You just got to sometimes relax and take it for what it is.
What makes you smile the most, Jackson?
One of the biggest things is seeing the people around me after I achieve something. They're proud. And this one here, my mum, who's sitting 2 metres away, she, despite my weekend not going how I particularly wanted it to, she was more proud than I could have asked for. And the same with Dad and Nan and everyone else who supports me.
Let's talk about that weekend.
Yeah.
What happened on the weekend? You went away for the Australian National Athletics Championships. You were throwing the discus, throwing the shot put.
Yeah.
And throwing
the hammer. Yeah.
How did it go?
Not too bad. First up was discus qualifying. That was on Thursday. There was, I think, 22 people in the field. Don't quote me on that one. Could be wrong. And I placed 10th, which was a bit of a shock because I only trained for discus about 3 or 4 times this year, which, despite it being my pet event for a while, hammer crept in. They had that. And then on Saturday was the discus final, and that was really awesome. Got to witness Matt Denny throw 69.35, an Australian record. The furthest throw I've ever seen. And because I've been around him for the better half of 3 years, and, you know, he helped me out and coached me for a bit. With everything that he's done, it's so awesome to see him progressing to the next level. It's amazing. And then recently, yesterday, Matt's achievement was amazing. The discus world record got broken.
Tell me about that.
Mikolas Alekna. He is 21. He's only a year older than me. Son of Virgilius Alekna, who was the second best discus thrower of all time. He threw 74.35, I think it got ratified as. That is a very long way. It's 20 metres further than I can throw 20 plus.
Where's he from?
Lithuania. He's currently in the US studying for college at Berkeley, California is where he's studying. And he's coached by the coach there, and he's coached back in Lithuania. And to put that into perspective, he won a world silver medal when he was 19.
It's in his DNA though, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, geez. The bloke was built to throw a discus. And his brother as well, who's a little bit older than him, also throws. He made the world final last year as well.
You're sitting here in your Australian jersey.
Mm.
What are your hopes and dreams, Jackson Mellor?
Every kid, I feel like, that does little athletics has the Olympic dream. I'm just the one that stuck with it. Obviously, it's a big part of, you know, athletics, and you'd be lying if to say you weren't aiming for that to some degree. So that's in the back of my mind. But also, you know, you've got Commonwealth Games. If it goes ahead in 2026, I think Glasgow might have put some interest in. World Championships, and honestly, but I feel like this or not, the main dream is just to throw as far as possible, and whatever you wear doesn't really matter to me. As long as I can do the actual event on any stage is most important.
Do you need financial help to try and help you realise that dream?
It's difficult as a track and field athlete, and especially being a thrower, because, you know, and rightly so, sprinting gets a fair bit of the limelight because it's fast, entertaining, it's awesome. But yeah, definitely track and field as a whole is very underfunded, I'd say. And I think as recently as the other day, I read that
winners of the Olympics only get $50,000 USD, which sounds like a fair bit to win an Olympics, but for athletes that are trying to make a living and someone like me who's sort of in the middle, it is a bit difficult, but we do our best.
What are your short-term, long-term goals, Jackson?
I think the best short-term goal for me is more structure in everything I do. Like, I'm motivated. I train every day. I'm disciplined. Like, every day I rock up, but it's more about I need to look in a calendar and go, on August 27th, I'm doing this, this, and this. At the moment, it's week by week. And I think for the moment, structure is a good thing for me as a short-term goal. But I guess branching out a little bit within a year, I think I could add 10 metres on what I already throw in hammer, that is. Big goals for that. I think potentially walking away with a PB that would have put me second in the country in my first national hammer event under 12 months training is a good sign, and who knows what will happen next year, but I hope I'm on the podium. And wow. I'm going to do everything to make sure that that happens. Where I am on the podium, I mean, there's obviously a lot of other people who are all training for the same goal, but in my mind, it's I know where I want to be on that, and I won't stop until it happens.
Well, so. Jackson, you are one of the kindest, gentlest giants I've ever met, and I've seen you tear down hammer throw cages, in accident, but I know you've got a very long future ahead of you in track and field, and I wish you all the best. Just before you go, Jackson, I want you to hold your hands up in front of this camera just in front of you here. Just hold your two fists up side by side. So your right hand fist versus your left hand fist are drastically different, and that is the power of training.
I think that's longevity in the sport. And honestly, there's a lot out there worse than me. There's some of the, I mean, I shook some hands on the weekend, and like Matt Denny, for example, and I've shaken his hand before. He's got like bratwurst fingers. It's like this hand is big, but compared to some of the other guys, like there's another hammer thrower who does work in mechanics all day, and his hands are massive. And so, I mean, yeah, there is a bit of a drastic difference, but I guess it's I hurt my wrist in the hammer final. I took a tumble on one of the throws, and I landed on it, and that didn't help in shot put. But that's all right. So yeah, it's a bit sore actually. You might need to just lay off throwing with this one, because the hammer's mainly this one, as you can see by the bruises on that one. Can some people see that? It's not very. This is the best they've looked in months, to be honest. Then there was one point here a few months ago where the fingertips were just black. Absolutely horrible. But that's definitely part of it.
Well, maybe we need to get you a mechanics apprenticeship or something like that, Jackson. But it's always a treat to chat to you, mate. If there's anybody out there that wants to help fund your hopes of being Tasmania's next Olympic athlete, next Oceania champion, whatever it might be, please get in touch with us here at Triple M. But thanks so much for coming in to chat to us.
Thanks again. And really greatly appreciate all the support you guys give me too. It's amazing.
Now, I'm a little bit jealous of this next chat, Kaz, because I was not informed that you were going to be doing this.
With Blue Sage Patisserie. Oh, we did sample some of their wares. Very nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely delicious. They did bring in a few little things for me, some that I had sampled already but was happy to go back for.
Yes, but it is a lot of hard work that goes into running a mobile patisserie tube.
Let's find out all about it from Blue Sage Patisserie's Christy Bruce.
This is our town.
Tell us about your business.
It's a mobile coffee and dessert van. So I travel around serving my desserts and coffee.
I think you're advertised as a patisserie. What makes up a patisserie?
It's a fancy word for a bakery. And coming up with a name, I didn't want cake shop, I didn't want bakery, and patisserie. Fancy word for bakery.
I have tried your goods. Patisserie is possibly the correct word for it. It's extravagant. It's luxury. Why did you choose a van and not a bricks and mortar shop?
Honestly, I had really good friends who had a food van, and I thought that's a really cool thing. Working around Hobart, working for businesses, I thought it was time to get out on my own. I didn't want the overheads. I just wanted something for me. And I thought a coffee and dessert van. Why I've got the van.
That's why you've got the van. Being van owners or stall holders, you've got the peephole to the whole festival.
Yeah.
You're there from dawn till dusk.
Yeah.
You can see exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
So your insight into a festival is really important. What makes a good festival in Tasmania?
Variety, local, good entertainment. I think, it's many things that make a really good festival.
Because a lot of people see owning a van and touring around festivals as a dream job. It's the freedom, but it is a small business. And we know
it's
that
it's a small business.
Small business work very, very hard
it's
to
hard.
Keep.
I'm sore today. I was at an event yesterday. I was there at 8 o'clock. I left at 5:30. No break. It's hard. It's physically hard. My hands are really sore.
That's something I have never considered. When you are at a festival or an event and you see one person in a van, that's probably the only person that's going
to
be there.
When do they go to the toilet?
That you don't get a break.
You don't get a break. Yeah. So I'll take today to, you know, do my thing and I'll start again tomorrow.
Hospitality hours. So this is your weekend?
This is my weekend.
Are you popular for wedding seasons? I could imagine your beautiful blue. And I did say that, and I even posted that on my Instagram page, this beautiful blue van with this most amazing chocolate brownie that my son wouldn't share. Wouldn't share it. I had to hold him down just to get a tiny little taste. And that tiny little taste is probably why I wanted to talk to you today, to find out why and where and how we find you and why you do it.
Well, I don't have a website as yet, but you can see my work on my Facebook page, so Blue Sage Patisserie, or Instagram. You mentioned weddings. I actually just started wedding catering, so the full shebang, buffet-style weddings. I did a wedding in January and I've already got 3 booked.
Do you take the van?
One wedding, I was thinking about it the other day, I did a wedding with the van a couple of years ago. They wanted a morning tea, high tea style wedding. So they booked me and I just served coffee to their guests. And it was great. It was at a park. I loved it. So, yeah, you can book me for your wedding if you wanted a morning or afternoon tea. And, yeah, I did some little afternoon tea items and, sorry, morning tea items. And that's the sort of thing that I wanted to get into when I started.
What's the advice you would give people who would be listening and really want to live the dream, have their own blue van?
Research. When you're looking at sort of what market you want to get into, whether it be coffee, desserts, pizza, have a look what's out there. Be prepared for early mornings, late nights. It is physically and mentally hard. But, I mean, if it's your dream, do it.
I'd say to you, Christy, owner of Blue Sage Patisserie, keep doing what you're doing. Where can we find you? Where can we find more information?
On my Facebook page, I post where I will be on the following weekend. So usually Tuesday I'll post, Tuesday or Wednesday I'll post where I'm going to be. I do everything. If you want a dessert, if you want a coffee, I do cakes and weddings. So send me a message on Facebook
Terrific. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
We've all heard of the Cancer Council, Kaz.
We have, and I'm sure we've all donated to one of their many fundraisers over the years. There's Relay for Life. There's also, this is a good one, Australia's Biggest Morning Tea. That's always fun.
Yeah, we will find out where the funds actually go, though, Kaz.
Let's find out from Cancer Council Tasmania CEO, Alison Lai. This is our town.
Thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us, Ali.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to chat to you, and I think one thing that we all know now in society is that cancer touches everyone.
Absolutely. It's very hard to find somebody in our life today who either themselves or someone they love or someone they know that hasn't been impacted by a cancer diagnosis at some stage in their life.
And the Cancer Council of Tasmania does wonderful work. I think that sometimes, though, the message of exactly what Cancer Council Tasmania does gets a little bit missed with Cancer Council of Australia. So what does Cancer Council of Tasmania do for Tasmanians?
Yeah, of course. And we know that ourselves, like quite often people, when you ask them, well, do you know Cancer Council Tasmania? You'll be like, yeah, no, I know that. I came to a lunch, or I came to your daffodil day, or I bought some daffodils and did a relay event or something like that. And so the fundraising side of the organisation is quite well known across the state. But what we actually raise the funds to do is sometimes less known, unless you find yourself in a situation where you need to access our services. So a lot of the funding that we raise, well, first of all the money that we raise stays in Tasmania. So it enables us to provide a range of services and programs. So the main one that people might think about is transport to treatment. And I say that because they're the little cars that you see on the road with our logo on it. And we have them all across the state, and it's free of charge. If anyone is undergoing their treatment for cancer and they're having trouble getting to their treatment, they just need to give us a call. And we have some cars there that can pick people up from where they are and then take them into their doctor, usually into places like the Royal Hobart Hospital or to Icon and places like that. And that's all free of charge. So the money that gets raised helps us do that. And then we have across the state three really lovely support centres where people can come. And we have one in Sandy Bay. We've got one across the road from the Launceston General Hospital. And people can come in at any time that don't need to make appointments. We've got beautiful staff in there who are supportive care workers, and they can assist anyone with their any sort of support needs that they might have when they have a cancer diagnosis, or their family or friends. And it could be information. We have financial support we can provide. We have scholarships available for young people who've been impacted by cancer. We have complementary therapies, oncology massage, Tai Chi, mindfulness. We've got group programs that people come and join, or just one-on-one support. And so a lot of that makes up a lot of the core of the work that we do. But then there's also so much more that we do in delivering education programs across the state about how to prevent your risk of getting cancer. We invest a lot of money into research, and we also do advocacy as well to government around how to respond to, you know, cancer in the community.
I'm still surprised that all the money that we raise, and we've been doing it for years, we've been buying badges and daffodils on street corners and going to luncheons, it's all staying here in Tassie. Yeah. We expect it to be, you know, spread around the nation.
No, so we do obviously Cancer Council Australia assist across the country with some of these really well-known fundraising events that we do. But all the money that is raised for Tassie comes back to Tassie. So they have a really lovely and efficient way of working out where the money has come from, and then it gets cycled right back to us. So they kind of are the cut that kind of comes, filters through them, but it comes back again, back to Tassie. And that's the same for if Cancer Council was to, say, for example, receive a wonderful bequest from somebody who may have passed and it's gone to Cancer Council Australia and they're from Tasmania, that money will come back to Tasmania for us to invest in the services here.
Amazing services that help people in times that are particularly difficult. You know, like I said before, families across Tasmania are all affected. Like we said before, I can't think of a person in my network who hasn't been affected by cancer. What else do Cancer Council of Tasmania need from Tasmanians? How can we help further?
Look, for us at the end of the day, it's obviously fundraising is an important part, but it's not all about the money in that sense. We're obviously trying hard to make sure that people know what we do, because we don't see every Tasmanian who's diagnosed with cancer, and there may be reasons for that. They may be getting their treatment interstate, or they may not feel like they need our support. Or so one of our things, I guess, is just every opportunity if someone knows or hears of someone who's impacted by cancer is, if they wanted to help Cancer Council Tasmania, it's just to remind them, look, you should check out. You should have a look at their website, give them a call. It may just be a conversation with them in the first instance. And because in some cases people want to talk to people who are experiencing a particular type of cancer, and we can absolutely put them in contact with those individuals as well. So if someone has bladder cancer, or if somebody has, you know, a rare type or uncommon type of cancer, that's where we can also help put them in contact with the types of organisations and resources that might assist them. We're just generally there to support people in whatever way they that we can.
It's not just an old person's disease, is it? What are we doing to help our kids?
Yeah, no, it's not. There's unfortunately a lot of young people who are impacted, and I think that sometimes that's just one of the stereotypes that exists, that it's something that we need to worry about once we sort of get older. And look, and the stats do say, I will say that the stats show that everyone has there's a 1 in 2 chance that you'll develop some form of cancer by the age of 75 to 85. So it's I can understand why people would consider it to be an old person's concern. But yes, we do see a lot of young people as well. And we have some wonderful organisations that are in our sector with us, like Canteen and, you know, Ronald McDonald House and others like that, that are specifically there providing very lovely support for their families. And we help as well predominantly through financial assistance and also through scholarships. Seize the Day, we can help people make sure they can continue to pay for their education and transport or anything that we can do for families with young children. And the other one too, I think, talking to someone only the other day who is actually an ex-beach volleyball athlete from the Netherlands, talking about how they never used to wear sunscreen over in Europe. Like, it was just a thing that they did. But coming here to Australia and realising just how different the sun is over here is... people sometimes don't think about Tassie as well as being a place where it can be a risk around getting something like skin cancer, but it is the second highest diagnosed cancer we have here in Tasmania. And it also is a cancer for young people as well. It's not necessarily an old person's cancer. So there's a lot of people in their mid-20s who are finding that they've got melanomas and the like. So we all have to be vigilant.
Can we stamp that out with education?
Look, education, absolutely, and it's just cultural too. So if you think about the skin cancer one, there is obviously a real, well, long-term concept, isn't it? Like, it's nice to be tanned, and it's a trend in some ways. And there's certainly a lot of work going on through Cancer Council Australia to end the trend around tanning and obviously the risk in Australia around skin cancers. And so some of it's cultural, it's modelling some of the behaviour, but yes, absolutely education at the end of the day, because sometimes we don't know that the risk exists, but then sometimes we also need to see the behaviour modelled by other people as well. Because sometimes we can know, oh, I should go out and I should put my sunscreen on, I should put my hat on. But unless we sort of start seeing people that we know and respect doing it, sometimes I think the take-up can be a little bit slow, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of information out there for people that need assistance if they are suffering cancer or know someone that is.
There's a lot.
And that perhaps maybe want to donate their time to Cancer Council of Tasmania. Where do people go for more info?
Look, if people were interested in donating their time as a volunteer, they just need to give us a phone call, or they can just hop onto our website as well. So it's www.cancertas.org.au. And look, if people are thinking of volunteering, we are always looking for wonderful people to help on Daffodil Day, where people will see people on the sides of the street selling daffodils for us. If someone is finding themselves at a little loose end during the day, gosh, you know, being a volunteer transport to treatment driver, I would say, has to be one of the most popular volunteering roles we have. It suits someone who's got time during the day to hop behind the wheel of a car and transport people around. But I would say that the people, that opportunity to sit next to someone quite frequently and take them to their transport, get to know them and support them in that little way, would have to be, and I've done it a few times myself, is an incredibly satisfying way of volunteering your time and very meaningful.
Alison, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
What a rewarding way to give back, Tubes.
Yeah, and how nice was it to talk to Ali about exactly where those funds go? And I think a lot of Tasmanians know the important work that Cancer Council does here in Tasmania. It's nice to hear that those funds are specifically staying here to help Tasmanians going through a really tough time in their lives. That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for joining us. We always love shining a spotlight here on Tassie. And remember, if you have something you think needs a spotlight shine on it, you can contact us anytime throughout the show via that text line on 0488881073. We love hearing Tassie stories, Tess.
Yeah, there are so many Tassie stories out there that we are yet to uncover, so let us know if you find something. Be kind.
And treat yourself.